pleased to say that tennis has been a focus for us this week, and it will continue to be in this hour. And right now, in fact, as we talk to David Mustard, the former New Zealand tennis pro, of course, now a coach. But David, in his day, was very, I think, one of our high-profile tennis players, to be perfectly honest. I just looked a little bit of information on David. I can't believe he's 63 years of age. That surely is a misprint. But I can also tell you that David played in the Australian Open, the French Open, Wimbledon in doubles, but also in singles, where he reached the second round in 1984-85, and also in 85, the third round at Wimbledon. So David Mustard knows all about playing in Grand Slam tennis events, and just how hard it is to get through. David, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Ian, thanks. I don't think I've ever actually, chatted with you before, but it's an honour, Ian. It is an honour.
No, the honest mind, mate. I'll tell you what, and it's your time of the year too, with the Australian Open, to be perfectly fair. And we've reached a stage now where it's been a little bit of carnage on both sides of the draw for men and women. But we do have the perennial in Novak Djokovic still there. Whether he's playing with an injury, we're led to believe he is, but he's not playing like it. And today or tonight, he gets Tommy Paul, an unseeded American.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at all the information that comes out in the media about his, you know, his hamstring pull. But he said that pretty much he's put a lot of praise on his physio. They've done their job. I think it's precautionary. I think it was spoken about. I think he did have a little bit of a problem there. But he seems to have got through that, because I'm telling you, I've been watching his last couple of matches and I'm absolutely flabbergasted. He's 35 years of age. He's won 9 Australian Opens. Let's look at all the stats. He's going for his 22nd Grand Slam. He is serving faster than he has before on first and second serves, averagely. He's getting more speed on his forehand and all the stats. He's actually playing the best he has for some time. He at the present time is in the zone. Now, he's very wary of Tommy Paul. Of course, it's going to be how they match up on the day. But look at all the stats. Are in the favour. They've never played before. Tommy Paul is one of the many Americans that are now coming through. His strengths, he has a good mix of footwork. He has a good speed. He's dynamic. He is dangerous out wide. He's a shot maker. But, you know, he's in his first semi-final of a Grand Slam. The deepest he's gone before, I think, is the highest fourth round before. Has good ability. He's 25 years of age, so he's 10 years younger. But it's hard to think that he will have the firepower on a regular basis to be able to take someone like Djokovic. Djokovic is really hitting the mark, to be honest.
I look at this matchup and I think to myself, this could go one of two ways. Tommy Paul could play the match of his lifetime, and Djokovic could be slightly off and be under pressure for great parts of it. Or Djokovic could wipe the floor with Tommy Paul on the basis that Tommy might have already played his final.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the draw, you look at the last two matches the Djokovic played, he just wiped the floor with those guys. And the guys, you know, Rublev, these are good players. These are good, consistent players. I think, in on paper, you pretty much say that it would be 3 straight sets to Djokovic. I think the people will want a battle. He may get a set, Tommy Paul, but honestly, you would not think he would take out Djokovic. He will have to play the match of his life. I don't know that he can do it on a consistent basis, you know, in the period of time they're out there. But you never know. It looks, you know, these players are getting closer and closer. And I'll tell you what I must say about the Australian Open. You know, everybody goes, I'm missing Federer and, you know, Nadal's out, whatever it is. I think it's been a great Australian Open. I think it showed a lot of players coming through, and I think the crowds appreciated that with the closest of matches, and, you know, people like Murray coming through a couple of rounds and 5-set matches, and one of the longest matches of all time, finished at 4 a.m. There's a lot going on, Ian, and it's actually been, I think, quite an exciting Australian Open, to be honest.
Well, on the other side of the draw, David, we've got the highest seeded and Stefanos Tsitsipas, and he's taking on a really, really powerful player in Karen Khachanov, who I saw dismantle Sebastian Korda, just with power, really. Yep. He was primed. He came out of the tunnel charging, served an ace first point, never looked back. Has he the potential to upset Tsitsipas?
You know, again, you're looking at this. Look, he has the ability, but again, you look at all stats leading to this point. I think Kachanov is playing very well at present. His strengths are his big serve, his big heavy ground strokes. Hits a little bit of harder, a bit harder generally off the ground than Tsitsipas. But, you know, their head-to-head record is 5-0 to Tsitsipas, you know, who's ranked 3 in the world. You know, Kachanov is 18 in the world. They know each other's games. They're both on a high. I mean, Tsitsipas, for example, is saying that, you know, he feels more positive. He's not thinking negatively on the court. He feels mentally stronger, which comes from playing a lot of matches and playing at a high level. Kachanov can worry him, but again, I think it's looking very much in Tsitsipas' favour. I think Tsitsipas is just a little bit faster around the court, has a little bit more, a little bit more shot selection he can use, but he's not going to take Kachanov easy by any means. So, and remember, Kachanov has been to the semi-finals of the US Open. He lost to Ruud last year. So he's been in the semi-final before, because sometimes that's a bit daunting for players as well. So he does feel comfortable, and Kachanov is a lot fitter this year, he stated in his last interview. So it should be an exciting match. At the moment, Tsitsipas is probably playing, I believe, a little bit better.
Right. Okay, let's look at the women's final, which has now been confirmed after the semis last night, David. Rybakina, of course, getting through. She's the current Wimbledon champion, and she's seeded only 22 for this Australian Open, which is a little bit puzzling in itself. She's up against Aryna Sabalenka, of course, the number 5 seed.
Well, again, you look at them coming in. You know, Elena Rybakina, she honestly has been playing great. She took out Swiatek, the number one in the world. But these two have actually played 3 times, and each time it was a very close match. But all 3 of those head-to-heads went to Sabalenka. You know, they're both similar ages. Sabalenka is 24. Elena is 23. They both are shot makers, very, very powerful. Sabalenka hits a little bit stronger off the ground, a little bit more variation in the Kazakhstan Rybakina's game. So again, I think it could go either way in this, but the stats really are lining up for Sabalenka, who's been in 3 semi-finals before. But of course, Rybakina has been in the final of Wimbledon. You know, and it's a pity because her ranking is considerably lower only because they gave no points to that Wimbledon last year because of different reasons. So it'll be an interesting match, but I think on paper, again, Sabalenka, possibly a very tight 3-set match.
Right. I really like to talk to you now away from the Australian Open, a little bit about New yep. Zealand tennis, David, because one of my wish lists is this. One of my wish lists is that we have male and female. Male would be great, both. But I just want to have someone in these draws at these Grand Slam tournaments. I know it's a perennial question, but how does that come about? How do we achieve that with our tennis people coming through?
Oh, and there's a whole lot of things required for that. I like Dick Rye. I watched him at the ASB Classic, and he's our number one rank, around about 450 in the world at the moment, in our seniors for the men in New Zealand. And you look at his ranking is way down to be able to even get access to the bigger tournaments and what have you. So he's always playing qualifying or lower tier tournaments. And it comes, there's a lot involved. What it is that you have to be realistic on where you stand with your game and what you have to improve on. You have to be around the better players on a regular basis to understand that you belong with them and see if you can compete with them. So you have to do your apprenticeship through the lower tier tournaments. It's win orientated. It would be great if we had more events in New Zealand, but that comes down to finance as well. And if you could play in those, you have a chance to be either wild card. If you don't have enough points to get in, I'm going to digress a bit here, so keep me on track, Ian. But if you can get an opportunity to play in those events in New Zealand with overseas players competing, it requires money to put those tournaments on. The ASB Classic, and showed you with a couple of New Zealanders playing in the main draw as well. We had a player in the main draw as well. You know, they don't see those players across the net. They don't understand the energy and the fitness and you know what's involved at that level. So they're not competing against it. So to get to it, you have to get your world ranking up. You have to play in lower tier tournaments to do that generally. You have to be around it. You can't stay in New Zealand. You have to be away. You have to be traveling regularly. New Zealand, it would be nice if we had more depth of players. I think we have some talented juniors coming through, but they've got to go through the whole system to do that. You have to be around it. So it takes finance to do that. And that's the bottom line. And you have to be realistic where you're at as you're moving along. It's lovely if you could have your own coach, but it comes expensive. Travel in groups comes expensive. I mean, is that answering your question? I mean, that's the same in most sports, to be honest. It's a hard one. Yeah, it is a hard one.
It's not giving me a whole lot of optimism here, David, because you mentioned so many things against it there. So, okay, so I've got a relatively...
You have to go overseas and evolve, really.
Yeah, that's my point. The point is it's not going to be achieved here. Is that your bottom line?
I think they can get stepping stones by having events that they have an opportunity in to see better players and to get their world rankings up, because it's all world rankings. I mean, I'll give you an example, and people don't always, that not involved in tennis, don't understand how that operates. Here's the bottom line, right? If you want to become a professional player, as a general rule, you're going to have to probably be in the top 150 in the world, okay? If you're going, example, the Australian Open, and I'll use that as an example, you'd have to be probably in the top 90 in the world to make the main draw. If not, you're in qualifying. The good thing about that, if you can get inside the top 200 in the world, you have a chance to get in qualifying. And now the finance or the money in those big events which we see, and I'll give you an example, the first round loser of the Australian Open is about $106,000 Australian dollars now. The last round qualifying loser is $55,000. There is money at that level, but to get to the level, you have to get your points up. And New Zealand would be a stepping stone if we had more events and more finance put in to give them the opportunity of doing that. Otherwise, they have to travel, you know, around the world on a regular basis to all different, you know, countries and what have you, to go through that transition. And we also, because of our size country, you know, you just don't have the depth. You go away, and a lot of players elect to go to scholarships in the States, which is a very good thing for them to play, get an education, and play at that level. But what happens again? If you want to do the circuit, you have to get out when you have your break from university and play and have a go. And that's pretty much it. So it is not an easy exercise to do it. Another little thing, in 1985, and I'm going back and I'm an old fella, and there were five New Zealand men players in the main draw of Wimbledon, myself being one of them, whoopee-doo. But what happened, we had five in there. Now, that didn't happen by accident because we had all gone out. You know, Chris Lewis, Russell Simpson, Bruce Dirlin, Kelly Evenden, we all went out and tracked the circuit on a regular basis. And it was not a cheap exercise, but we had to play day in, day out and work out where we fitted and how we all operated. And that's the bottom line. You need the opportunity to do that. It takes a lot of work.
David... No, it's very... This is enlightening. I want to know the answer to this because it's puzzled me and it concerns me actually as well, to be perfectly honest. The other thing is tennis perceived as being from a junior, from a family-orientated position? Is tennis perceived as an elite sport? Like golf?
I think in areas, yes. And New Zealand Tennis or Tennis NZ is trying to look at that development schools program and try and get some funding to do that, to give everybody a chance to pick up a racket at school level. That's why they have the Hot Shots program and what have you. I would say probably it is not a cheap exercise. And I don't deal with the elite kids anymore. I used to be involved with the national squad, regions and all sorts of things. I do club coaching, so I have a junior program and one. Come on. and they only touch tennis for a very short period of time. If they really want to play, you know, parents are a huge part of that, because they're the ones who become your volleyball hitting with you on the court. Because let's face it, Ian, do you play tennis socially?
Casually, very casually, not that often, yeah, David, I'll be honest.
But if you went out with your mates and you decided you wanted to have a hit, you'd take a can of three tennis balls out there, okay? And if you could hit a few over, you're hitting the ball over and you're forever picking up balls because someone's not keeping the rally going. But you have to persevere with that. So when a kid starts playing tennis, they go to a junior program, they have a go, they go, oh, I quite like hitting this ball, or my mates are playing it, and they kind of involve in the game. They may do some group lessons, and they may, you know, do some private lessons to hone their skills a little bit. Then they have a club night, or they play a little interclub for their teams. They have to involve, and it's usually the parents will be taking them, and the parents are very much around them. In New Zealand, I believe, and I also believe it's important, they should experience all different sports to learn the hand-eye coordination and to learn team and things. So I think you cross-reference sports. I think it's very important. But I think also, I had an interview with Mauna Toglu some time ago, and he agreed it's slightly different here than it is in Europe or Eastern Europe or whatever it is, the mentality here. You touch the sports, then you decide if you kind of like the environment, and then you start competing at different levels. Really, it's not an easy one, because you have to have enough courts, court time, and you need your parents behind you to get you there, to hit a few balls with you. You need a wall. If you look at all the past champions, good players, they all practiced against a wall on a regular basis, because that became their volleyball to hone their strokes and to get the hand-eye coordination working. So, and again, am I answering the questions that you wanted answered? Because
David,
it's a club aspect. And I think it's court time, and it's being on the court and involving on a regular basis. It is not easy. That's why team sports are sometimes a lot easier, because you have more space, and it is often a cheaper exercise.
David Mustard, this has been enlightening for me, and it's not the last time I want to speak to you, so I have to end it now for time constraints. You know what radio is all about. But here's the other thing. I'd love to call you back and get more into the teeth of this, because once the Aussie opens over, because it's concerning and disappointing, because I'm sure there's talent there. You know, in the Polynesian-type society, these kids have raw power and strength, and they just need direction, I'm sure. But, David, thank you so much for this morning, and I'll make sure we get a hold of you again shortly. It's been great catching up with you.
It is, Ian. Remember, Ian, the ball's in your court.
Oof, like it. I absolutely like it.